When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Welcome back, everyone, to the X-Cast, Salvatore Mundi, born on a Sunday.
I thought literally the exact same thing.
Did you? Excellent. It's not just me then. I made that joke on Twitter and I don't think anyone laughed then. It's welcome back to our coverage of My Struggle for the season finale of The X-Files, maybe the series finale. I'm Tony Black and I'm joined by, had to be for the last one, Darren Mooney.
Oh, thanks, Tony.
Yeah, it's good to have you on for this because we didn't get to talk about My Struggle 3. And I know you had a chat with Carl about that on the last set of podcasts for Nothing Lasts Forever. So, you know, you've covered that a bit, which is great. And that was great to listen to. But it was I really wanted to ideally get you on for this because, you know, this was always going to be a fascinating episode. In this one, we're going to start, as we normally do, with talking about Mulder and Scully. But we're going to, obviously, there's a lot to talk about.
There is a lot to talk about.
Because I don't know if I've watched more in 38 minutes of television ever than I have in this.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Like, I mean, Carter in all the interviews he's given, I think the Hollywood Reporter one in particular, has praised the editing on the episode. And to be fair, the editor actually deserves a great deal of credit in terms of cramming just so much into the episode. Like, I have very strong feelings about what was chosen to put in those 38 minutes, but I feel like the amount of velocity and the amount of ground covered is just astounding. It really, really is. It just moves. It goes like the clappers. And yeah, we'll talk about some of the choices that were made creatively maybe in a moment, but just the momentum of the episode is actually quite impressive.
Before we talk about some of the more character details, let's see. I mean, what did you think of it? You know, you've binged watched season 11 over the last week, last week or two, ready for Nothing Lasts Forever, and so you were up to date watching this. I mean, obviously there's been a bit of a rollback now, and we will talk about this, about the potential of this being the end of the end, because how do you end the X-Files? But what do you make of this as a season finale, at the very least? Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. And I talked about this when we talked about Carl and Nothing Lasts Forever, where Carl asked me what I was expecting this week. And I basically confessed that I was waiting with something approaching a sense of dread, almost. and I mean, I say that as somebody who, we've talked on the podcast before, I like Chris Carter's writing a lot. I think he's a great ideas man. I have a great fondness for the mythology. I think that in recent years, the mythology has been sort of unfairly done by in sort of coverage of the show, where everyone's all like, oh, in hindsight, it's the standalones are brilliant. And the standalones are brilliant. But, you know, you get a lot of the mythology doesn't go anywhere, and so it's worthless. And you're like, that's not the point. Like, the fact that, you know, the truth is not great doesn't make, like, Nicene 731 awful, or, like, Patient X and the Red and the Black anything less than a masterpiece. And I mean, I you know, so I will stand by the mythology, and even like My Struggle 1 and My Struggle 2, I am inordinately fond of My Struggle 2. And when I say inordinately fond, I mean I don't hate it, unlike a lot of people. But I admire the ambition of what Carter was trying to do, even if the execution I thought was a bit muddled and clumsy. But yeah, as you mentioned, when I talk about like My Struggle 3 with Carl, was a moment at which I just sort of hung my head and sort of like weeped into my arms almost. It was like when I binge watched the season, watching My Struggle 3 was a point, and it was only like only 30 minutes into like a 10 episode season. I was like, do I really want to continue with this? And then like the season gets much better. I've talked about this. I really like the 11th season as a whole. We'll talk a little bit probably at the end or in one of the later podcasts. But yeah, I was approaching My Struggle 4 with a sense of dread. And with that in mind, I actually kind of liked it. I mean, it's got a lot of terrible choices in there. It's got a lot of stuff that we'll talk about, particularly when we talk about like Mulder and Scully, which I think we're talking about today. But I liked certain aspects of it. I liked the sheer momentum of it. I liked the relative simplicity of the plotting. I liked the boiling down of the X-Files mythology into what amounts to a little family drama, you know, and capturing it in the space of a single episode. I think that it handled that relatively well, and I think it handled it about as well as it could. I think it's a lot better than, say, a lot of the Season 9 mythology episodes, which is the lowest of bars for mythology episodes to pass, but I think it... It was not awful. It was not good. It was not great. But I didn't hate it. And I actually enjoyed certain parts of it in isolation. I loathed other parts of it. But it was not as bad as I expected it to be, which is damning with faint praise.
Yeah, I think that's been a bit of a general consensus, really. I've just got to go back to something you said when you said the truth is not great. I'm not sure that tagline would have caught on, really, back in the day.
Yes. It's Chris Carter's marketing. The truth is not great.
Not great. But you know, it would have been quite apt for a lot of fans when they, if they'd been able to have like a William Scully-style flash forward to My Struggle 4, because I think there is a lot of, you know, really interesting reactions going around. I mean, I wasn't dreading it because I've kind of enjoyed the struggles in their own way. They've been a bit of a struggle sometimes, but I mean, I thought My Struggle 3 was a bit misunderstood, and I liked a lot of what that did. I did. Well, I say misunderstood. Maybe that's the wrong term for it. I don't think it was misunderstood, actually. I think it's more that I think people took what Carter was doing in a really sort of offended way, and I kind of can see why he did what he did, and I think it was more interesting choice than some people, and I kind of separated a bit from the really sort of the real anger at what happened to Scully, even though it's difficult and it's not very sensitive and it could have been handled much better. And that's the thing with the struggles, they're not subtle. I mean, that's been right from the very first one. When you compare them to the mythology episodes of the, you know, the past, they had a lot of layers to them. They did have some subtle elements, you know, they were a real mix of episodes. This has just been four thrillers, really, you know, in various different degrees,
with lots of exposition, with loads of exposition
and voiceovers and all this kind of thing.
You know this exposition dump you got earlier? That was a lie. Listen to this exposition dump.
Yeah, this one's the truth until the next one. But it's good. I enjoy it from a simple perspective. You know, they're not the best episodes of these revival series. You know, Chris Carter's described them as like a mini series within the revival series, and I think that's quite true, really. I think they are a piece of their own, you know, and I wasn't approaching it with dread, and I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. I think similar sort of reaction to you. I think there were parts where it's, you know, I mean, as a, if you put your critic's hat on, they are demonstrably quite badly made in some respects, like not necessarily from a visual point of view. I think visually, they're quite good. I think, like you say, the editing's pretty well done, considering. And, you know, but the writing is, and the plotting is something to be, you know, left desired. And I think
I had some payback to pay back.
There's been loads of lines going around. There's a great article on the EEW where there's this brilliant review which just points out all the hilariously bad lines of dialogue, like, I shot my secondborn son once, you know, things like this. And it's,
so I should shoot my firstborn twice. Have you seen the internet is my favorite line of the episode. It's like,
Kirsch, have you seen the internet?
Kirsch is like, they have this on computers now.
And what was it? I think it's Tad O'Malley's, death will hunt you down. Like,
but to be fair, like, that's an Alex Jones pastiche. I actually quite, I feel like you can't overwrite an Alex Jones pastiche. But it's stuff like the bit where Skinner very, with a stern face, says, Mulder's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
Exactly. So there's a lot of awkward sort of dialogue, but there has been throughout these struggles. I think it's of a piece. I think it's consistent with the rest. And you know, from that perspective, I did enjoy it, and I think.
Well, there's a certain pulpy quality to it, which I do admire. Like,
yeah.
I mean, and we'll probably talk about that when we talk about like Carter later on or you know, in the next couple of days. Because, I mean, there is a very comic booky quality to it that I think is quite conscious.
It's kind of overwrought quite intentionally, I think. And it's really trying to, you know, get to the pull the heartstrings of Mulder and Scully, really, and get into their emotional state. You know, and other writers do it in a different way, don't they? You know, they touch on various different aspects of these characters. And Carter's
goes straight.
It's been the same. Yeah, it's all through the show, really. It's just been very down the line. Let's get to Scully being quite my emotional, my baby, and Mulder being quite intense, you know. And I'm on a crusade with my, and it's, you know, but it kind of works in that sense, I suppose.
It does. I mean, like, we're talking today about Mulder and Scully, which is probably, I would argue, the weakest aspect of the episode in some respects. Because, I mean, in many ways, it feels like the template for the My Struggles has been, and this makes a great deal of sense because, like, you're talking about the peak of the show, has been, like, the Redux era. Has been, like, because you have that same sort of, like, the heavy Carter monologue introductions. You have lots of, like, Mulder doing action sequences and Scully sort of waiting around. And, like, this is kind of, it's really frustrating if this is Gillian Anderson's final episode, as has been, like, rumoured and suggested, because it's very much, it's a Mulder do action, Scully wait around and look sad episode.
Yeah.
In the style of other classics, such as, like, Emily, for example. Or even, you know, Memento Mori, which I don't like as much as other people, but which follows the same basic template and setup. Or even, like, obviously the Redux episodes, where you have Scully sitting round being forlorn and sad, and Mulder out doing, like, generic action stuff. And, like, this is Mulder as Jason Bourne, pretty much. It's like, all of a sudden, Mulder is wasting defense contractors off screen and moving in slow motion and twirling cars down highways. Mulder's sort of obviously been doing, like, those, like, parkour classes in his retirement. Because this is very much, like, My Struggle 4 paints Mulder as an action hero in, like, a very modern sort of sensibility, a very modern way. I think there's a conscious choice by Carter. It's just an interesting choice for a season or series finale, because I don't really think of Mulder in that way. I don't think of Mulder as an action hero, even though in the My Struggles, like, he's literally been struggling physically as much as psychologically. Like, you remember from My Struggle 2, where they have the flashback with, like, the fight choreography in the room with the assassin, which exists for no reason other than to shoot a scene like that with David Duchovny and Chris Carter. And there's a lot of that in My Struggle 4, but I think it works quite well in My Struggle 4 because it gives the episode a kind of a propulsion that allows you to get past some of the loose plotting and some of the you know, occasionally winking but occasionally meant to be earnest dialogue as well, because the thing moves.
It does move fast. I wonder if the action stuff, because you're absolutely right, you know, Mulder was never really that guy. In fact, in the older episodes, you know, he was a bit crap at it, really. When he got into a fight, he wasn't really very good. He used to not necessarily get his ass kicked, but he was a bit clumsy with it.
I remember Skinner pressing him up against the wall in Anasazi when Mulder thought he was a big man.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, so there's always been that level of, he's not quite that guy. He's more, you know, he's more of the, you know, the thinker, you know, that kind of. So he's, I a shameless plug here, but I do, and you've been on this, I do a Star Trek podcast called Primitive Culture, and one of our latest episodes was all about Star Trek Insurrection and Captain Picard. And in the Next Generation of movies, Picard starts to become much more of an action guy, and he was always quite a very learned, you know, captain of the ship and all this kind of thing. But then Patrick Stewart really wanted to make him... Yeah. And he always wanted to make him... Patrick Stewart wanted to make him more of an action guy. So, I mean, you know, First Contact, he starts shooting guns and going on a big crusade, and he's, you know, he's angry and all this kind of thing. And then, you know, it almost didn't quite fit the character in a way. It seemed like an evolution. So maybe there's some sort of middle-age thing that's going on. You know, when these actors and these, you know, these developers, they start to think, well, maybe let's try and transform the learned person into some kind of, you know, Avenger. You know, because, I mean, in this, Mulder is like a mix of Charles Bronson, like Jason Bourne and Jack Bauer. I think somebody on, like, the basement Facebook group called him Fox Bauer, which I thought was quite appropriate. Because there is that sort of evolution for Mulder now into this pulpy, action hero. And it's been a strange thing that's been there from the...
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
First struggle onwards.
It has, and I suspect, like, again, we're going to talk about Carter later on, but I suspect that's a very conscious choice in what Carter's doing here, because if you look at the way that Carter shoots and edits and directs these episodes, they're very clearly meant to be action spectacles as much as sort of plot and kind of, you know, character-driven spectacles. So, for example, you have, like, the cross-cutting back and forth through time, which looks like something from a Christopher Nolan movie. You have, like, the parkour sequence with William, which looks like something from a Jason Bourne movie. You have, like, a scene where Mulder is surrounded by a bunch of guards and has to wrestle with them. And that's, again, that's another, like, modern, like, Tom Cruise action sequence. And you have even, like, a slow-motion sequence when Mulder walks out of the room after executing Mr. Y, you know, point-blank range.
Yeah.
And it's just this wonderful low-angle, slow-motion Michael Bay shot of Mulder, like, going to find his son.
Yeah.
Like, there's something almost endearing about the simplicity of that basic arc. And, like, I don't mind it as much as a lot of people, because I think that the mythology episodes have always been, in some respect, blockbuster episodes. Like, think of, obviously, the mid-air abduction in, say, Tempest Fugit. But, I mean, even stuff like the train jump in Nicey. There's always been, or even, like, the visit to the Arctic, back if you're going way back to Colony and Endgame. There's always been this sort of, like, push the boat out technically and physically and, like, do spectacle in the X-Files mythology. And I don't mind that aspect of My Struggle 4. I feel like it makes sense for, like, blockbuster television to now look like the Bourne movies or the Mission Impossible movies or the new James Bond movies, as compared to back in the 90s when they looked like, say, Die Hard or Under Siege or something like that. And I mean, that's the part of the episode that I really, really like. And I mean, and a large part of that's down to, and I think we talked about this, how it distracts from the other elements that maybe don't click as well for me.
Well, I think a lot of people would agree that the elements that don't work as well are the key sort of character emotional beats, in a way. I mean, I think Mulder gets a better journey in this than Scully does, because I think quite a lot of what Carter does with Scully here, you know, aside from the fact that she's kind of sidelined from an actual sort of, you know, action perspective, it's more that I think the whole William stuff and the Smoking Man revelation is just dead on the table. I mean, the whole moment when Skinner tells Scully this, which should have been this what kind of revelation, is, well, A, you don't even hear him really tell her it, and then B, it sort of slows to her breath, you know, in order to sort of suggest a real sort of oh my god reaction. But you don't really get that. Then she's like, oh, that's Mulder.
Yeah, and
then, go after the.
And then when Mulder's like, but look, it's the son that we've been looking for the past 2 years. Scully's kind of like, oh, I'm over that. Like, there's something really disconcerting in the way that the episode treats Mulder and Scully. And I feel it's weird that we're, like, 15 minutes into the episode and we're finally talking about how the episode treats Mulder and Scully. But, like, with regards to the William stuff, right, which is, like, you have Mulder, right? Mulder. I love Mulder. I love Mulder a great deal. I think he's a fantastic character. I think that some of the ways in which the character's been handled in the past have been less than ideal, particularly with regard to William. And I'm talking now particularly about, like, the 9th season, where Mulder is like, bye, take care of the baby. I'm going to go off and have cool adventures and stuff. So there's a moment at the end of, like, My Struggle 4 where Mulder comforts Scully, and he's like, if I'm not a father, Scully, what am I? And you're like, we have literally never seen Mulder be a father outside of dream sequences and flashbacks. Like, there's never a sense that Mulder has been, like, a parent figure to William. In fact, it seems like he ran out the door the moment that he could. Now, I know, obviously, Duchovny left, and you've got all this excuse happening. But, like, it's Scully who has the emotional investment in William. So it feels strange that Mulder's the one who's like, oh my god, I'm never going to reconnect with my son properly. And it's Mulder who has, like, the hugging his son moment, whereas Scully gets a moment with William where she thinks it's Mulder and doesn't find out until afterwards, or until afterwards, that she's having a conversation with her son again. But even then, you have, like, the really awful bit at the end, which is not how people react at all. Where after, again, after, as you pointed out, they skip the big emotional beat of Skinner telling Scully that William is the cigarette-smoking man's son, you have Scully saying, William was an idea. William was an experiment. You know, William was not my son. And you're like, this is a character arc that you play out over a year or several years. It's not one that you cram into the final 2 minutes of what may be a series finale. And it feels disingenuous and it feels unearned and it feels really, really mean-spirited from a plot point of view, because William has been such a big deal for the show, like, forever, but in particular since, like, the revival. And then to end with the big twist that, oh, William's not actually such a big deal after all. Doesn't really matter. Never, nothing really matters. It's not important because he's not actually our son. Although he may be my son with the cigarette-smoking man, it's ambiguous as to whether or not, like, Scully was implanted with her own eggs or whether it was a cigarette-smoking man and something else. But but Scully is just, like, she's over it in a way that feels disingenuous and unfair and cruel to, like, Anderson, who's been asked to sell... Anderson has been asked to sell grieving mother, like, through the 9th season, in the 10th season, through the 11th season. And, like, her big dramatic payoff is, well, that was interesting, I guess. By the way, I have another child.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible ending.
It is. I mean, there's no getting around that, really. I was sitting there going, what? Like, hang on. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I said this on the Podwatch, I think, when we talked about William, the episode. You know, that character has been a massive albatross around their necks for 15 years, right? Without question, right? Getting rid of him was one of the best decisions they made at the end. But, the problem was the damage was already done in that he was the emotional, you know, anvil that was always there. You know, he was there in the background, you know, I Want to Believe, you know, they were talking about him. It was just, there was no way to get around him, especially when time had passed and they could show him as a kid and an adult and this kind of thing. So it was always going to come back to William if the show ever came back or in whatever form. But the problem is to do this and then like you said, to write him off as not important because of, you know, this revelation. I genuinely think Carter got to a point where he realized William was just this sort of super god, you know, Q from Star Trek in the making. And he went, hang on, I can't keep him with Mulder and Scully. He's too powerful. You know, he can do everything. And I think he thought, hang on, I've got to get him out of this. I've written myself into a corner with this character. So I wonder if the smoking man and that choice was partly in order to be able to get the detachment from Scully that we get at the end of this episode. And for them to be, and to give them potentially an out, give them a happy ending in theory. They've got a new baby, they can go off, they can be happy. You know, but to just dump a character that's been important for 15 years in their psychology, it's ludicrous. And most shows would not get away with it.
And I don't think The X-Files does. Like, as much as I enjoyed My Struggle 4, it doesn't. And I mean, you're right when you say there's a sense of Carter, like, grappling with William and saying, actually, this was a stupid idea. Because the description of William as an idea and an experiment feels like a conversation in the writer's room rather than between, like, two parents of a baby that actually exists. And, like, there is certain aspects of this that, like, make me uncomfortable that play back to, like, and I love the 8th season. I think the 8th season is fantastic. But, like, one of the things that bothers me about the 8th season and about Carter's writing in general, the X-Files in general, is this weird sense that, like, William only matters if he's the actual biological child of Mulder and Scully, and that if there's this weird sort of, like, anti-in vitro fertilization, this sort of, like, really awkward rejection of, like, William not mattering if he's not Mulder and Scully's biological child. Like, and it happens throughout the episode as well, where, like, his parents, who are brutally murdered, and who you get, like, an introduction in the sort of the nice opening scene. His parents, you know, the people who raised him are dead. They've called him Jackson his whole life. And all of a sudden these people show up and start calling him William. And he's just like, yeah, I'll roll with it. And then there's something that feels really disingenuous about the idea that William doesn't matter because he's not Mulder and Scully's biological child. It feels almost like it would have been more pointed for, you know, Mulder and Scully to reflect on the fact that maybe he was a cigarette-smoking man's biological child and say, he's still our son. We're still responsible for him. We still brought him into this world and we still take responsibility for him and we are still his parents, even though, you know, there's no biological bond there. It just feels... it's very neat writing, and it feels like neat writing that makes me a little uncomfortable.
It's all to sort of tie off things quickly, you know, and that's the thing. It's not earned. It's not organic, you know. Considering they've been building with this up for the last, you know, two revival seasons, the payoff is really poor, and you kind of think, well, I mean, where on earth do they go after this? Yeah, the way this is left, it's like you've written these people into a corner, let alone William. And I just don't know how, I don't know how you get back from that now. And it's just, I never thought I'd say this, but I think I prefer the ending of The Truth.
Really?
And I never thought I'd say that. you know what I mean? That is more touching and fitting than this, I have to say.
I mean, what really galls me about the ending to this episode is that, like, you're literally just after getting rid of William, right? Which is the last time that Scully got pregnant with a child that we thought was Mulder's, right? You've discovered that plot doesn't work. You can't make that plot work. You've been trying to make it work for the bones of 20 years, and it didn't come together in the end. And you've conceded that it was a failed experiment and a failed idea. So what do you do literally the moment that you jettison this albatross that exists around the neck of this show? And keep in mind, Carter, when he's writing this, he believes the show is coming back. Carter doesn't for a moment believe that this is the last time you're going to see Mulder and Scully. He makes Scully pregnant again. literally, you fixed that mistake. Regardless of how it played out, you have conceded that making Scully pregnant was a mistake. Why in the name of goodness do you immediately do it again?
Yeah, and I think I saw a post... and I think Carl may talk more about this on the mailbag, but I saw a post from Clara Cook, one of our hosts and regular guests, in which she pointed out that it's physically impossible for Scully to be pregnant for two reasons. One, she has no ova. B, she's 54.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's one of those things where she's like, it just wouldn't happen. You know, and I think in one of the interviews, Chris Carter sort of hinted at the fact that maybe there's still a bit of alien junk going on in Scully that could have given her a bit of a boost. Exactly. I know. Some of his explanations, I mean, I love the guy. I think he's brilliant. And, you know, but some of his explanations are wonderful. And he's just hand-waving everything that seems to have happened in this episode. He's like, oh, well, maybe, you know, there's a bit of alien rejuvenation in there. Oh, maybe they're not dead. Yes. And I just think it's so... It's so cheeky, really, in a way.
There's a sense of, like... And, I mean, I know that there are certain sections of fandom that are baying for his head, but I know, we've been critical of some of the decisions that he's made here, but part of me just admires the gumption of a man going into interviews after his season finale and getting asked questions like, is X character really dead? And he's like, well, you never know on the X-Files. And he's like, yeah, but we saw the other character get shot through the face. He's like, well, you never know on the X-Files.
Oh, you never know.
It's like...
Yeah, I love it.
Literally, I haven't decided yet. It's like, yeah, that's not how that's you
write. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, that's not how you
yeah,
write.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. You might as well just go, I don't know. Yeah. We'll figure it out later. Yeah. And that feels like something that definitely, once you get to the end with Mulder and Scully, it's very much a case of, we'll figure this out later. Okay, let's worry about them. Let's get another series first. So it's a very, very mixed bag for our dynamic duo, I'm afraid. So, yeah. Not a great start, but we're gonna move on. We're gonna talk more about the other characters tomorrow in My Struggle 4. So stay tuned for that. And just remember you can find us on Twitter at @X_cast. Until then, check out the basement, the X Cast Basement, on Facebook. And if you want to help us support the show, donate on Patreon at patreon.com/thexcast. Until then, we'll see you tomorrow for more My Struggle 4. And remember, trust no one.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.